Let's call this meeting to order. Do we want to take care of this? The minutes for March 8th. Would anybody read the minutes for March 8th? And can
I will so move, Mr. Chair.
Representative Lemire moves the minutes of March 8th. Is there any additions or corrections from anyone? All in favor of approving the minutes for March 8th, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Now March 13th. Who has read the minutes for March 13th? Representative Mahoney moves the minutes for March 13th. Any additions, questions, or deletions? Hearing none. All in favor of approving the minutes from March 13th, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Passed. First we have House File 2698.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and it would be...
Welcome to our committee.
Yeah.
And I will move House File 2698.
And the motion that would go to Health and Human Services Finance.
That's correct.
Okay. You know, if you want to... sometimes a bill that you put in is a really good bill. It makes a lot of sense, and you wish you could do it. And then reality sets in, and some things that you want to do, the time frame is too short. It would divert resources from something else that's very important, on a very important topic, nonetheless, and create some challenges. This is one of those kind of bills. I just had a meeting half an hour ago with the Minnesota Housing Finance folks, Ms. Orr and Ms. Blankenship. And they like the idea of the bill. I'm not even sure if they're going to be here today. But the bill is eminently unworkable. Anyway, it's the form it's in. And so what we came up with, well, let me just tell you that the issue of homelessness for families is a great problem. And maybe I'll do a minute of testimony from Colette. Just tell us how bad a problem it is, will you? And then,
would you give your name for the record, please?
Yes, Mr. Chair. My name is Alexandra Fitzsimmons, and I'm the Legislative Affairs and Advocacy Director for Children's Defense Fund Minnesota. And so with that time frame, what I just want to share with you today is that we had wanted to talk with you about the issue of child homelessness and how it impacts the development of children. And what we know on any given night in Minnesota, 4,500 children are homeless. And we know that half of those children are under the age of five. And why that's important is that that is a critical time of early brain development, and that 90% of a child's brain is developed by the time that they're five, and that early childhood experiences and adverse childhood experiences can actually alter the development of a child's brain. So an adverse childhood experience such as homelessness has a significant impact on a child's development. But we wanted to make certain that we weren't stopping the story there, but talking about how important early interventions are in order to improve the well-being of children. So we had two different tracks. We want to end child homelessness, but at the same time, for children who are homeless now or who are formerly homeless, who are at risk of developmental delays, we wanted to come up with a plan on how we would respond to their well-being, where they are, being creative, being cost-effective with programs and services we have now, and figure out how do we do this? How do we help them get back on the path for healthy development?
Well, thanks, Mr. Chair, and I think that summarizes the approach of the bill. I believe there's a significant fiscal note that creates, which I don't believe you have the money to fund, which kind of creates the other problem. And so being a realist and trying to move the ball forward in this, and especially given our discussion, as this bill moves through my committee, the department is going to come up with language that will encourage the focus on homeless matters about children and veterans, which is where they see the greatest needs. And they're going to come up with language to incorporate that into their own work within their own budget, as well as give me some advice about if there's some way we could take some TANF money, which there is a little bit laying around, to work toward homeless families. And so that's my plan, Mr. Chair, and I know I didn't talk to Alex between the meeting and now, and we had a whole array of witnesses that would have been very good witnesses telling about the problem, but I think in the respecting the time and the new scope of what this bill is going to wind up, I think that that's my plan. And apparently there's quite a need to move people from shelters, families from shelters into rental housing, and that's where they would put the first dollar, and so I'm going to take the department's advice on that. I'm trying to come up with a way to do that and actually have some real cash, because I do have a small pot of TANF sitting there, which is this is eminently designed for that, and there are some crisis needs with these families. And I think through all this, it will be a very good product. They also said that the time frame in the bill, 7 months, was enough time to crank out a meaningless report, but not to give it the thought that they're working on anyway, trying to break down silos. One of the challenges I've become aware of through my time here is how every department has its own world, and they occasionally speak because they're at a gathering together, but they don't do a lot of functional work to share the burdens. Even budgets are siloed, and, well, that's a health department, that's housing, that's human services, and serving the same family. And so I think what the assistant commissioner and their staff are trying to do is to actually create this dialogue. I think the language we'll come up with will promote this dialogue and actually make the dollars go further, which I think is compelling in these times. And so if there's any questions from members, I'm going to take that. I think we'll not do testimony, and that'll be the product you'll see hopefully in my omnibus when this gets all settled.
Any questions from the member?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And that's right. I was just curious, when you talked about the 4,500 kids, what is like a definition of homeless? What kind of situation is that? I mean, are they on the street or are they in a... Yeah, that would be help me.
Ms. Fitzsimmons.
Yes, Mr. Chair. So in the bill, when we define homeless children, I know we're not talking about the bill, but when we talk about children who are homeless... We talk about children who are living in motels, hotels, camping grounds, emergency shelters, transitional housing, cars, buses, parks, public spaces, abandoned buildings, substandard housing, and bus or train stations. So that would be the definition. I know that Representative Abler had some questions early on about making certain that we're properly defining children who are homeless. So that's who we're talking about.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Abler, I like what you're saying about breaking down those silos, and I'm not on the public safety committees anymore, but I hope that's one silo that you're exploring, because, you know, when you look at homelessness among female population in the state of Minnesota, probably 70-80% of women who are homeless are battered women. And I suspect that a lot of adolescent teenage girls are homeless are also battered. You have the issue of trafficked girls, and so I don't know if DPS has explored all of the possible federal funding for battered women's shelters, but it seems to me that that whole arena needs to be more integrated into what we're doing statewide in terms of trying to not just deal with supportive housing, but long-term shelters and housing for people in the state of Minnesota. It's just a silo that's out there.
Thank you, Mr.
Maybe
Chair.
You've already explored it.
Mr. Chair, Representative Paymar, just one observation. Part of the problem breaking that silo down is they have a lot of guns in that silo, and so I'm like, ooh. So I'm a little shy, never mind that, but I think if you wouldn't mind helping with this language, the department's going to provide me some language, and what I picked up on was the passion of these two department people who I don't think I know very well at all, combined with the passion of Ms. Fitzsimmons and the people who were going to testify, and Representative Paymar's concern and passion about this. And I think one thing I've discovered in my 14 years, if you can get behind where people want to go that are already working on it, rather than make them do a new project that might actually distract them from it, I think they would like help breaking that silo down too. So perhaps as the language gets crafted, you can even help edit it. And I know Ms. Fitzsimmons will and her folks, and the department already has a will for this. So I'm kind of excited about this project that just sort of even got better today and actually can turn into something. So.
Any other questions? Seeing none, I will renew my motion to have House File 2698 pass and be sent to Health and Human Services Committee. All in favor of that motion, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, same sign.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I really appreciate it.
Good luck with your bill. And next we have Senate File 1551. Carolyn McPatrick, she is here. I don't see her. Oh, there she is. You're right in front. You were too close. Welcome to our committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm happy to be here.
And I will move Senate File 1551 and send it to Ways and Means. Would you like to present your bill?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Thank you very much.
I appreciate it.
And to the members of the committee, thank you for hearing the bill today. During the 2011 state shutdown, I was contacted by an electrical inspector in my district. He was responsible for inspection of the county fairgrounds before the opening day. Because of the shutdown, however, he was officially prevented from doing that. The inspection of the power source connections to the rides, the electrically operated games, the lighting, the concession stands, and the animal barns is a matter of public safety. And the words of this man are still clear in my memory. He said to me, "What do you expect me to do?" He actually spoke to a much larger problem that was going on in the state. During the 2011 shutdown, there were approximately 20 fairs and carnivals that were occurring. And there is being passed around a group of photographs, and there's a little label to each packet of them that explains what you're seeing. These were photographs that were taken showing hazards at just one of our county fairs last summer. These would have presented a significant hazard to the hundreds of adults and children who attend the event. In addition to the problem with the county fairs unable to access the proper inspections, in some cases there were areas in the state that were struck by severe storms, and reconnecting power to homes was delayed because of the inability to have electrical inspections done. Now hopefully state shutdowns will be rare occurrences, but we do recognize obviously that the potential is there, and I believe that it's imperative in the public safety issue that we need to continue these inspections even in the case of a shutdown. I feel that a large portion of our responsibility here is to protect the public. This bill provides the mechanism to do that. I have been very pleased to work with the Minnesota Electrical Association on this bill, and if enacted, it does provide for inspections to continue even in the case of a shutdown. Bill Straczynski from the association is here, and he can actually speak in better detail to this bill.
Welcome to our committee, Mr. Straczynski. Give your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Bill Straczynski, and I'm here today representing the Minnesota Electrical Association. I thank Representative McElpatrick for bringing this legislation forward. And for the committee, Mr. Chairman, to consider it. It's an important issue. You know, it just wasn't state projects that were affected by this shutdown last year, or certainly the inspections. All projects in Minnesota that require electrical inspections were impacted. The danger runs in several different fashions. These are life safety issues. Electricity is a dangerous thing. There was obviously a disruption of commerce on behalf of the contractors themselves, because once you stop a job, as you're waiting for the inspection, difficult to get restarted. So there was a lot of those kinds of issues, certainly, but more importantly, you have to, when you're leaving walls open waiting for the electrical inspector and construction project to inspect the wiring and everything else before you close up that particular wall, those are dangerous conditions which were just left unattended for several days at a time, therefore causing a lot of problems and certainly safety concerns on all of our part. The carnivals was an obvious example. There were 20 carnivals that opened in Minnesota last summer without electrical inspections, and those are dangerous situations, and there's a reason they're inspected every time when they set up, because they bring all of their own equipment with them. And certainly residential, we had a number of contractors complain about houses that were struck by lightning, severe storm damage and things that they could not reconnect these homes because they have to wait for the electrical inspection to occur from the power company before they turn the power back on. Or from the electrical inspector inspect the work so the power company would turn it back on. That was prohibited. There's lots of other examples, but I know in the interest of time, I just want to say, Mr. Chairman, that this legislation is supported by the Minnesota Electrical Association, NECA Contractors, the National Electrical Contractors Association, the Contract Electrical Inspectors Association, ABC, the Minnesota Electronic Security and Technology Association. I think we covered the waterfront, and everybody who in the industry is involved about this major life safety concern. and basically would appreciate and urge your support of this particular piece of legislation. I know of no opposition to it, from the industry. Thank you.
Any questions about the bill? Representative Mahoney.
Representative McPaul-Patrick, why do you think this is so much more important than Judge Guerin did? Because Judge Guerin didn't deem this to be an essential state service.
Mr. Chair and Representative, I looked at the concerns that I have. One of the photographs shows a little kiddie wading pool, and it's got little balls or something floating in it, and there's a submersible pump that keeps the water circulating, and I don't know what the game is, or if you're supposed to catch them out or whatever. And that, obviously, that's going to attract the five-year-old crowd. Mm-hmm. And it does concern me. I don't want to speak against the judge, but that really concerns me. If we have an unsafe condition, I really feel that it is our responsibility to protect the public. And I do feel that to have something like a county fair, you know, all of the cords and everything that run through the grass and all, I just feel it's very important. And I feel that we need to protect the public safety regardless.
Mr. Chairman, if I could add a comment on that, if it's appropriate.
Mr. Trusinski.
Mr. Chairman, there was a special master course appointed to take a look at all these and to make determinations about critical or essential employees. I know for a fact the Minnesota, the Contract Electrical Inspectors Association, joined with electrical contractors and what have you, had the brief prepared, submitted to court when the shutdown frankly ended. And so we were waiting for that ruling from the judge at that point in time for our hearing. But we deemed it appropriate enough. But I think, you know, I've been around here this is my 40th session, and I've seen a lot of things happen over the years, and sometimes when cases get presented in a large picture way, judges or legislators or executives, people in the executive branch, they don't know all of the subtle details, all of the things that the state of Minnesota really impacts and does. So you really don't have a lot of time to analyze and digest that, because there's thousands of situations, I'm sure. But we felt pretty comfortable that the judge, special master at least, would have ruled in our favor had the petition continued.
Mr. Mahoney.
Well, I understand what Mr. Straczynski is talking about. But let's not make any mistake about this. This is a way to get around the fact that we didn't get our work done. That's what this is. If you were so concerned about this, you would add in high-pressure steam. You'd add in mechanical. You'd add in structural. You'd add in just about everything. Electrical, I don't understand why those carnivals were allowed to go forward. I don't think they were supposed to. I think there's a state law that says that they have to be inspected by electrical inspector before they can open. I may be wrong, but I just, you know, I'm going off of the last 14 years here. So why should these people, this particular group of employees or actual contractors to the state, be exempted from when we don't get our work done? So answer me that, and then we can pass your bill.
One thing that I'd like to add in is the difference between a building inspector and electrical inspectors. An electrical inspector is a private contractor, has nothing to do with being a member of a state employee. So that makes them somewhat unique in that they have a job. The electricians have already paid to have this done, and no one can work on a job without having that electrical inspector, a private employee that has been paid already, than having that electrical inspector. It's going to stop everybody.
Mr. Chair, that we stopped all road construction. We stopped food inspections. No, wait, we didn't stop food inspections. But we stopped all sorts of other things. Now we're exempting one little thing out that the special master did not think was appropriate. So maybe your bill either needs to be greatly expanded, or you need to make the case as to why your particular bill is so much more special than the road construction, the building construction, everybody else that we shut down because we didn't get our work done.
Just like I said, the Representative Mahoney is, there is a state electrical inspector is a private person. He's got a private business. He is not paid in any way by the state. None of his benefits are paid by the state. We're a building inspector, a plumbing inspector, and all of those inspectors are paid for by the state or local government entity. Is that correct?
That's correct, Mr. Chairman.
So with any other questions? Seeing none, I will renew my motion to have Senate File 1551 be passed and sent to Ways and Means. All in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign.
No.
And motion passed.
Thank you. And members of the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee.
House File 2177.
Mr. Chair, I would move House File 2177 for possible inclusion in the final jobs bill.
That's correct. Pardon me? Your bill's up. Welcome to our committee.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I really do appreciate that you took time to hear this bill today. I think it's a very important bill, and even though I have two testifiers, I promise that we would be very brief because the bill is not that complicated. It should go fairly quickly. And this bill would provide $2,000 scholarships for 2,000 students or former workers to gain the skills needed to obtain a job that pays a living wage in an industry that is needed by Minnesota businesses. And so we think it's very important. It's a collaborative effort between the governor's workforce and council and DEED and the MNSCU, which is the higher ed institution. I have Brian Lindsay with me, who is the executive director of the Governor's Workforce Development Council, and Karen Hynek, who is with MNSCU, the Minnesota State College System. And as you know, Mr. Chair, you serve on the Governor's Workforce Development Council along with me, and so this is a bill that we think is really important. And with that, I'm going to ask Brian to very briefly outline the components of the bill, and Karen basically to give her support here.
Welcome to our committee. Give your name for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Brian Lindsley, and I'm the Executive Director of the Governor's Workforce Development Council. I'd like to thank Representative Peterson for bringing the bill today, and wanted to relay my the GWDC's support for opportunity grants. The GWDC, as some of you know, is a 32-member body with 28 members appointed by the governor and four legislators. And the GWDC approved a recommendation for opportunity grants in 2010 under the previous administration and renewed that support in January of 2012. And the GWDC supports opportunity grants because it addresses several key workforce issues. First is the growing skills gap, which I'm sure you've heard mentioned many times before in this committee, with 70% of jobs by 2018 requiring some sort of post-secondary education, and a rate of about 40%, a little bit more, in Minnesota currently. A second thing that this bill addresses is low retention rates. In Minnesota, less than half of all two-year students make it to their second year. And some of the reasons for that are cost and lack of support. Third reason is the cost issue. In Minnesota, we rank second in cost at public two-year colleges, which is twice the national average. And current forms of student aid don't often target non-traditional students, even though about three-quarters of our students entering two-year colleges are non-traditional, and that's the biggest growth area for the colleges. Finally, non-traditional students need some support services to complete. With a retention rate of less than 50%, support services can go a long way to making sure they complete and get the credentials they need. So we think opportunity grants are a great answer for five reasons. First, they're strategically targeted to in-demand industries where there will be jobs that are needed around the state and pay livable wages. Second, the money goes to individuals and not institutions. So individuals have the choice to go to the institutions of their choice, and it specifically funds their success and the support services they need. Third, many states have initiatives like this Opportunity Grants Bill. For example, in Washington, their program has 81% retention and completion compared to 54% for similar programs in their state. So it's significantly boosted retention and completion in other states. Fourth, this bill includes support services in terms of providing one point of contact for people who are participating in the program and coordinating access to services that can enable students to succeed. Fifth, this program focuses on credits and credentials that employers value. So with that, I'd like just to thank you for hearing this bill today. I'm here to answer any other questions you may have.
I think Representative Scalzi would like to bring up an amendment.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I would like to rescind my earlier motion to move House File 2177 and place it in the omnibus jobs bill, and rather I would move the delete all amendment to get 2177 into the author's intent.
Okay. Anybody have any questions about the delete all amendment E1? Seeing none. All in favor of that motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Move past it. The bill is in the form you want it. Is there any questions about the bill now as amended? Representative Stensrud.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Peterson or the testifiers, I just used a phrase I'm just not familiar with, the in-demand industries and coming up with certain positions. Give me examples of those so I have a good feeling. Thank you for that answer. Yes.
Well, yeah. One of those industries is microphone repair.
Yes. Perfect.
In-demand industries are determined by economists at the Department of Employment and Economic Development, and they do that, I believe, on a monthly basis for regions across the state. So it changes on a regular basis, but I believe the bill describes that they would be their demand jobs that have a higher growth rate than other jobs in the area, and there's a certain threshold for wages that is also considered.
And Mr. Chair, I and Representative Sensrud, I might add that we hear continually that there are 80,000 jobs around the state of Minnesota that are not filled because of the inadequate skills, the kind of training that's needed to fill those jobs, and this bill is aimed at those folks. And I just want to share one quick little story. Went to my caucus, and it was early, and there was a man sitting in the caucus room already, and he was working on his thing, so I introduced myself, and we started talking, and I said, well, what are you doing? He said, oh, I'm doing my homework. And I said, really? And he was about, I'd say, 35, 40 years old, and he said, yes, I'm an electrician by trade, but I've been on the bench for 4 years, and I know that the specialty that I have been working in just is not going to get me the kind of job that I need to support my family. And, you know, jobs are changing all over. So I went back to the community college, just to Minsky system. And in that role, I have been working for 2 years, and I'm about to graduate. And when I graduate, I will have a job, because it was in a form of drafting, and I don't know a specific form of drafting. But he said, it's going to get me a job that helps me to support my family, which is, and he said, I've been working, you know, part-time. My wife has been helping me, and it's really been very difficult, and we've had to change our whole way of living to do this. But he said, and I do feel sorry for those who can't have the opportunity of support system. And he said, I've been able to do it, but there's a lot, there's a real need out there. And it really spurred me on to really push this bill, because those are the kinds of folks that we need. We have a lot of people who graduated from high school, been trained to do a particular job, but the jobs are no longer there. So they need retraining, or it could be students out of high school also. It does indicate it could be students of any level. But I'm thinking particularly about those mid-level folks that need to be retrained and could use some assistance in a two-year program. And Karen, you might want to add, she's with Minsky, and this is a joint effort.
Certainly. Mr. Chair and fellow committee members, my name is Karen Hynek, and I do work for the Minnesota State College and University system. I along with the Minsky system, are very supportive of this proposal that has been put forth, because there are a whole host of new industries that are emerging, and the Minsky system is working regionally with our employers and with the DEED to determine what those academic programs are, and also refining our existing programs to make sure that we are meeting the new industry needs. And I think this bill in particular can really help students to access those types of programs.
And if you have any questions, we'd be glad to answer them, but I think it's a really cooperative effort between these two entities and also some support system for those folks coming in.
Representative Mulry has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess it's more of a comment. I think this is really good and excellent, and it's what the Obama administration studies have shown will get us out of the high unemployment. My one problem is, I see you have someone from Minsky there, but I've been fighting with Minsky for many years. They're cutting back on the technical courses at the same time as industry and everybody else, the people representing workforce development and everything, are pushing for more technical courses. So I would hope that your witness will go back and say to the leadership there at Minsky to stop cutting technical courses.
Well, Mr. Chair, I can't go back, but maybe Karen can go carry that message.
I certainly will carry your message. In addition to that, I do know that Chancellor Rosenstone, along with DEED and the Governor's Workforce Development Council, are working regionally on 32 different meetings that are taking place between March, April, and May to really look at what technical programs need to be and where they should be regionally to make sure that we're meeting the workforce demand and really trying to update our programming and add new programming where it makes sense to do so.
Any other questions? Representative Leiter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Because I'm not familiar with the Minsky training program, my concern is you currently has a program in which training grants are available. Is that correct? Is this an expansion of an existing program or a new program?
Mr. Chair, Representative Leidinger, this is new. It's not an existing program. It's really an effort aimed at those specific job skills that are needed by businesses, and so the training is specifically, it's geared to those businesses, and it is new, and it does have a support system. It's direct grants, and as you can see, there are some qualifications. You can take 3 years to get this two-year diploma or credential, but it also provides some funding. Obviously, you know, there are going to be other funds that will be needed by these folks as they spend 2 years in this program, but this gives them a grant that helps them to be able to get through the program.
Can I follow up, please? All right, what I'm driving at then is, thank you. Thank you for that, because I wasn't sure. What about the private sector training programs that are out there? Is this going to go in direct competition with those organizations? Or would those organizations be able to apply for these grants?
Mr. Chair, Representative Weidinger, this is specifically a coordination between MNSCU and the governor, and DEED, and it doesn't address the private groups, actually, deliberately, because of the work that's being done already to initiate discussion about what business needs are. As Karen has already said, there are meetings going on around the state, 32 regional meetings to determine those needs. And we did not include the private. Usually the private sector training is more expensive. And this way, and we put this together because there's a support system with DEED and with MNSCU. We haven't included the privates.
And I'm just going to follow up one more for some clarification. So if I had a company out there that gave instruction on some computer training, let's say, I could not apply to MNSCU for a grant, so that students that would come to me would be able to get dollars out of this program. Just trying to see how well we can work in conjunction with private training centers, because here we're giving government dollars, government institution, for people to come to their facilities when there are a lot of private sector training facilities that are out there. So I don't necessarily want to give an unfair advantage to the government schools. It doesn't make sense to me. When you've got the private sector that are out there working very hard to compete in the marketplace for training.
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Weidinger, there's been a lot of discussion about some of the private training institutions and their placement rates and their costs. And this program is aimed at pretty close scrutiny of those students who apply. And it's just, at this point, it is just the public institutions that we support, that we have developed over the years, we have placed around the state. The MNSCU system has campuses all around the state to be able to work with the businesses. And I think that's an advantage, because I don't think we have those private training groups all over the state. And at this point, it is MNSCU, but maybe you would like to add to this?
Well, I would certainly say that MNSCU does have 54 campuses across the state. And in the two-year market with community and technical colleges, we do offer an array of credit-bearing accredited college credentials, whether it's a certificate, a diploma, or an associate degree. That also then transfers for students' pathways if they do want to go on and continue to the baccalaureate program, which is one of the reasons why it's an advantage to work with accredited institutions. In addition to that, MNSCU does partner with a number of community-based organizations that may also offer training programs, so we do partner with them. But I think the spirit of this particular bill is looking at the credit side of the house, and also with non-credit customized training that's working with individual businesses that have determined a need for in a specific industry sector training, that they then work with the college system to develop that training.
So the programs that you offer are accredited, you're saying, the
yes.
Vast majority of them, as opposed to a lot of training programs that are specific in nature do not necessarily come along, you know, have a certificate involved, but it just completed a course of instruction.
Right.
And so it really is, to me, it really attracts a different kind of a group of people. Not necessarily those that may need this training. I mean, I would think like in the sample that you were that example that was brought up. Here is a person who had extensive training in one area and just needed to brush up skills on another. Those aren't necessarily have to be accredited courses.
Mr. Chair, I'm going to just comment that, as Karen already said, if you want to, if a business particularly wants to just do a retraining program on their own, they can do that. It can work with the community college and a private, actually private training, to develop a customized training program for what would be needed, but that would not be the credit-bearing kind. This is credit-bearing for people and also involves probably academic as well as some academic, because many of the jobs now require some advanced training in computers or math, science, whatever, and that is something that is afforded to the student at this two-year college.
All right. Thank you. My concern, Mr. Chairman, of course, is the private sector and the training institutions which are out there. We just don't have something in the system for them as well, and it'd be great if they could somehow access this kind of a grant as well. And I'm not sure how we would do something like that.
Mr. Chair.
I'm not either.
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Leidiger, we could put together a bill like that, you know, that really did address what the private groups have. I think this is so specific in its nature, you know, what it's trying to do. And it goes along also, haven't seen this, All Hands on Deck, which is put out, talks about the training needs in Minnesota. And it's been put together by the Governor's Workforce Development Council. It's something you should read because it deals with all the sectors that are needing some kind of training or advanced education and jobs.
Let me just follow up one more time. So if it's something that's out there that Minsky is not doing, and a private company was doing that, would you be open to, would Minsky, do you think, be open to including that in their course catalog? Or are they more apt to develop that program themselves?
I think Minsky would probably want to develop the program itself to serve the citizens of Minnesota. So I do think that based on the regional conversations, if there are industries that we currently don't offer credit-bearing certificates, diplomas, degrees, or baccalaureate programs for, that's where we certainly want to develop emerging programs, if that's the case. I don't know that we would be putting into our catalog a private company's training models.
Well, Mr. Chair, that kind of illustrates my concern, because here we're throwing more and more money into the Minsky system. You know, God, I love them and everything, but look, there's a lot of private sector training companies that are out there. I work for several of them. And it's very difficult to compete. They spend a lot of money on putting together great training programs. They do their own research. They do their own marketing to attract people. It's all on private dollars. And here, what are we doing? We're handing money to government to go ahead and compete with them. I just have a hard philosophical problem with us continuing to do this unless we have some sort of a program. And I'm fine with these grant programs that go to people who need these. I'm not trying to say that we shouldn't help people to get the training that they need. I just think that those dollars need to be open to go wherever courseware is available out there, whether that's in the private or public or private sector. So I'd like to see an expansion of this so that an individual could really apply either place and use those monies in whichever courseware and whichever kind of a company they can find that would serve their need, that would serve their needs.
One other thing, Mr. Chair, and Representative Leidinger, on Subdivision 7, it talks about the reports that we have to do, and it does, and in it, it talks about retention rates, completion rates, credentials awarded, job placement, and wages, and then it talks that we about the idea of measurement, and that not only the outcomes have to be compared, but they have to be compared to comparable groups of students, including Pell Grant recipients and other low socioeconomic status systems who are enrolled in the same program. And what we're trying to do here is determine if this is the best kind of program for this particular population and do the kind of research that is needed. And if this is not meeting the needs and these students are not doing well, they're not graduating in 3 years, they don't maintain a 2.0 average, then we need to look at that program very carefully. But right now, we as a state have developed the MNSCU system. It's ours, and it's in all regions of the state. It's fairly inexpensive, and I think it's doing just a great job of helping both mid-level students as well as those just out of school meeting their needs for the job market. Now, whether the private groups are doing that, I've not been approached by private groups at all, and we've really not worked with them. I've read some of the research. Some of it's good. Some of it's really not good. And in terms of placement and what they're doing, and are they working with the business community in the same way, and are they really following students and providing that kind of wraparound support that's needed? But I'm not saying the privates can't do it at some point, but this particular bill deals with MNSCU and the DEED, which are both state programs.
Representative Lager.
Just one more question. So if MNSCU wasn't there and there was a need, what do you think would happen?
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Leidinger, I think we'd go looking. We'd probably go looking for you and say, what? we'd
have entrepreneurs out there filling that need. But every time you keep plugging that huge hole, which is growing, with government programs, what you're going to end up with is just government programs. Now, the training industry is a huge, it's a $60 billion industry, and it is growing. But I'm just concerned we want jobs and we want private sector jobs to occur. I mean, I'm worried about squashing a big industry that really could be flourishing a little bit more in this state, and that is the training industry, which flourishes quite well in a lot of other states where you don't have government plugging that hole. So anyway.
Representative Moline.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just going to make a quick comment based on Representative Leidinger's comments. And I think that MNSCU works very closely with industry, and there are partnerships. I know in my region there are partnerships between industry, our community colleges, which are MNSCU, and our high schools. And everybody puts money in, and everybody works together to make sure that they have the appropriate training and programs to get the workers trained for the local industry or for the businesses. And it's important to have that partnership because we need to be working with the businesses to make sure that we have the appropriate programs and that we're training them correctly. So I think that MNSCU already works close with industries in some areas, maybe more closely than others when they have partnership with local businesses. So I know that MNSCU is already doing that, and I think that this would enhance those efforts.
I think if you look in page 2 of the bill on line 2.8, it says training must be of an occupation that is classified as having a long-term demand and measured by average or above average growth rates and current demand indicators of at least 4 stars as designated by the Minnesota Department of Employment and Economic Development. So it's not just any specific specialized training program that we're looking at here. It's ones that fit this definition. So I think Brown Institute and the radio programming, I can think of them, that probably wouldn't fit under this definition. So there's certain things that Minsky has been chosen to have, and they are by far the number one customized job training provider we have in the state. And they develop curriculum around the needs of employers, as other people I'm sure do also. I know if I was going to hire a baker, I would go to Dunwood. But the way this bill is drafted is for a specific occupational groups of people. Is that correct?
Yes. Yes, Mr. Chair, it is.
And Minsky does know those groups and is ready to satisfy the needs. That's why they have been chosen as a provider for this particular bill. Now, if we want to have another bill that would go for occupations that aren't served by Minsky, I would be a co-author. And with that, we have Representative Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I'm sorry I missed the first part of this discussion. I just have a question of the author. If I'm reading this correctly, on line 1.16, it looks like the person who is eligible does not need to have a high school or GED. They just have to be 18 years of age or older, right? They could have a high school degree, they could have a GED, or, it says or, so is that correct?
You know, Mr. Chair, and I looked at that. I was going to make an amendment to put an and I asked Brian about it, and I think I asked you whether there might be any student 18 years of age who would qualify for one of these programs if they haven't graduated. So, or was it Chair?
To me, that's a question for Minsky, because criteria two is that you have to be accepted into a training program as well. And okay. From many... And this is where Karen could chime in.
Minsky does accept students who have not achieved their high school diploma as long as they meet ability to benefit guidelines that are established by the federal government, dependent upon the particular program that they are entering into. So we are open to that piece, and also do serve students through customized training.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Peterson, I'm very happy that it does say or. Because I can tell you, I know I represent people who, they haven't graduated from high school, but they've got years of experience in a particular industry where they don't have any credentials. And this could be really helpful to them. And so, I hope you keep it that way. I think that's good. And I did want to ask you, does this include, is the agricultural industry at all included in here? I'm thinking of, you know, we have a whole emerging sector in urban farming and other kinds of farming, where, again, I'm just curious if that's one of the areas that you've looked at or if you would look at it.
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Clark, they have to meet this criteria that is in the second page.
Mm-hmm.
And DEED has that criteria all set out, because this is for those businesses that are in high demand. And as Brian said previously, that changes on a month-to-month basis. And so I would think in Greater Minnesota there might be something that will emerge from the agricultural area, but I don't, you know, if you're having meetings all around the state, mm-hmm. and much of Greater Minnesota deals with the agriculture industry, I would think there might be something emerging in that area, but I don't have the answer as to what right now.
Mr. Chair, and you and I have had some conversations about this whole arena. I would really encourage you to not just think of Greater Minnesota, but as I mentioned, there's a whole emerging urban agriculture industry, you might say, that the occupation, and I think it's I've actually been looking for ways to figure out how people could get credentials for some of the incredible skills that they are bringing to the plate there, and I think they would probably meet a lot of these criteria. Anyway, I just wanted to put that out there to see if that could be something we could also work on.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Get yours covered?
No.
Well, I say what?
No, I think that, Mr. Chairman, I think that we're so used to having government do training now. They've done education very well in this country, but it used to be you found a lot more training companies that are out there, which was usually the domain of private companies that would train people in, whether it be driving buses or trucks or computer repair, a lot of private vo-techs and things like that. And that has now been encroached upon by our education system. They have gravitated into corporate training, the corporate business training world. And we're seeing more and more of it. And what we do is we encroach upon the private sector, and this is a big problem.
Well, the private sector training programs you're talking about, you got to remember, according to Charlie Weaver a couple years ago, the private sector spends $2 billion a year in training their employees. And one of the ways they do it is through MNSCU, by having their private training programs developed and by going to business training institutions from the private sector, like you're saying. And unfortunately, I have to say one thing about MNSCU and the University of Minnesota. They're becoming less state schools all the time because we are not fulfilling the amount of funding we should be giving them. And that's why tuition's going up. Right now, some of these private schools are a bargain compared to MNSCU and University.
Mr. Chair, I really appreciate all of you hearing the bill. I think it's a good bill, and I didn't hear if it was being sent to the student register or where it was going from here.
This is being rolled over into our committee.
Oh, into your, okay.
Okay.
And just one last comment. You know, actually, MNSCU and the technical college have always been engaged in training, and we wouldn't expect them to stay static any more than we want our other schools. We want them all to be reformed to meet the needs of our constituents and our businesses. And so that means they have to change. They have to keep up with the times. They have to come up with new programs that meet those needs. And so I think this is a good bill because actually it works with deeds to be sure that we're addressing those business needs. So with that, thank you for hearing the bill.
Thank you, and we'll lay this bill over for possible inclusion in our omnibus bill. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And now we're going to cover the compilation of all our what do I want to say? Bonding proposals that we rated. We have right here. Everybody got a copy of this? Everybody has a copy of it. I don't believe are in any specific order. They are the top vote getters. And we will give these to Chairman Howes. And he will. We did pass them out. Here, you can have my copy if you don't have it. You have one in there, Karen.
I'll find it.
Other than that, we certainly would entertain any questions you have. I know we had Representative Mahoney's legislative assistant and Rebecca go through them together, so we know that we've fairly represented both parties' initiatives. There was one member of the DFL caucus that didn't turn in their sheet. Other than that, I think this represents everybody. The top vote getters from both parties are here.
Chair, does this conclude or exclude? So you just added up everybody's votes and this is what it turned out?
Yeses and noes. And this doesn't necessarily.
Mine didn't get in there.
Mine didn't either.
Or I should say the governor's. I had the governor's transportation economic development that didn't make the cut.
Yeah.
Which had some outstate.
That was supposed to be.
Yeah.
Outstate.
That's an oversight. He said that was supposed to be.
Supposed to be.
It is.
What else did you forget to put in?
He's been mad the whole hour.
I said it for you, didn't I? Did you? I appreciate that very much.
Is there anything else?
It is Representative Scalzi's governor's proposal for transportation economic development. I don't know how much money was it. How much money was involved in that?
I think it was $20 million plus there was an extra $5.5 million, so I think it was $25.5 million. So I would make that motion that that be added to the list for the governors. It was House File 2185.
I agree.
The governor's
all in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. Thank you.
And it was some outstate and some metro. Yeah. It's transportation economic development.
I voted for it. Other than that, I don't think.
What was that project?
Can't remember. I didn't have one that made it. But I noticed none of mine were there because there wasn't any to have it.
I was mad when I got up.
I noticed there was nothing that said Gunther here. How about Mulry? I don't know. I think if you look at the thing, it's pretty bipartisan. So I think the hue and cry that this is a partisan bill should be squelched. Yes, Representative Stenzer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to clarify, we're going to take a vote, and does that mean, maybe you could clarify what a yes vote means. Does that mean we agree with fully funding to the amount on all of these projects and as this list? Or
we didn't get a target, so we couldn't go and go towards the target. I remember Representative Krinke, when he was chairman of the Capital Investment Committee, I took every project that was in our committee and sent them all to him with full amount, because I think we should have a target. But we don't have one. And he must have a reason for it. I don't know. Maybe he's got it all done himself and he just waits. I have no idea. But I do know that he hasn't been given a target yet either. These are just recommendations. That's why we went with yeses and noes. The one that's supposed to, the ones that have the most yeses are here, as amended. Any other questions? Yeah, Representative Mulry.
So if you didn't vote for,
I like your haircut, by the way.
Looks like a shave, but
get your money's worth.
So non-votes counted as no's then?
Non-votes would be counted as no's.
There were no
non-votes. There were no non-votes. Some people just put yeses and no, nothing for no's. We assumed everything that was nothing on there was a no. Any other questions? It's not my system, but it's one that we're doing the best we can with. Anything else? Okay. Dan says we need to vote on this. All in favor of having our recommendation list as amended, recommend by, say aye. All in favor of this list, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign.
No.
The chairman is in doubt. All that say want to approve of this list, raise their hand. Two. How many we got? Seven. All that do not approve of this list, raise their hand. 7-5, the list is approved.
7-4.
7-4, okay.
You guys were really loud, right?
It's because he has a very loud voice.
Yeah. With that, I think we are adjourned.
Yeah.